A remedies expert is important because if the judge, Shira Shinlin, finds liability in the case, she needs to hear about remedies which can be imposed. The plaintiffs brought in Sam Walker as their remedies expert, a man with 39 years of experience in policing and police accountability. Walker explained to the judge that a comprehensive approach would be required, that problems must be addressed in every part of the police department to be effective. Attorney for the plaintiffs, Jen Borchetta, is with Beldock Levine and Hoffman.
The specific remedies that he's suggesting are, one, that any remedy that's ordered be comprehensive. Two, that it be a court, that there be a court-appointed monitor who is empowered with a lot of responsibility in ensuring the implementation of the remedies. And three, that there be community input into the remedies and the remedy process, so that the community is both a part of identifying the remedies in that process and also participating in their implementation.
It looks as if the city is trying to say that some of this is already in place.
Right. The city suggested that remedies are not necessary because there's no unconstitutional practice. That's essentially what the city is attempting to suggest, which of course is ridiculous because the remedy expert assumes that liability has been established. And if there's an unconstitutional practice, then whatever the NYPD is doing is not sufficient. As a matter of logic. So the questions that the city was asking were really sort of logically ridiculous.
And how did you think that the judge was responding as there was testimony by Sam Walker?
It seemed that Judge Shinlin was very interested in Sam Walker's testimony because she will need to identify ways that the remedies can address the problems if she decides that there is a problem. And so I think that her questions were suggesting that she is struggling with, should she find liability, what remedies could be applied that would be effective.
Meanwhile, outside the court, youth say they are haunted by stop-and-frisk practices. Youths like Carlos Canella from the Lower East Side say they feel humiliated and degraded. He says he's been stopped since he was 13 years old.
I would say a month ago, I was walking down to the store to get a bag of chips with my cousin and salsa. You know, we was watching movies, we wanted to eat. So, you know, the cops roll up, they come out their cars, they're like, put your hands in the air. I reach for my pocket to take my phone out to record it, and they're like, don't put your hands in your pocket. You know, I kept my hand in the air. They turn us around, throw us against the wall. That's when I had hair. The cop grabbed me by my hair, started filling my pockets and filling my shoes, and he's just literally just pulling me, like just violating my rights as an American citizen. I'm a U.S. citizen. I was born here. So it's just like, it's just complete violation the way these cops just toss you around and rag you and just check you without your consent. It's just not right. It's illegal.
Did you try to report it?
He didn't show his badge. I asked him for his badge. He ignored me.
He ignored
his badge
you.
Number, yeah.
And what about, wasn't there more than one officer?
Yeah, it was two officers.
And what about the other officer?
The other officer was checking my cousin and having an individual conversation with him.
Did your cousin get his badge number?
No, my cousin did not.
So how did you feel after this?
I felt very violated. I felt like my rights were violated as an American citizen.
Throughout the trial, there was testimony on safeguards in place to report police abuse and misconduct. But what about the untold numbers like Carlos Canella who don't see a shield, or whose view of an NYPD officer's shield is blocked, or those who are afraid to report what they think is an unlawful stop, the unaccounted stop-and-frisk victims? Attorney Jen Borchetta.
And one of the reasons that the statistics are important in this case is they give a broader picture of something that cannot be shown in civilian complaints because civilians don't come forward, or because police officers know that they can prevent a civilian complaint from being effective by simply not giving a badge number at all or not giving a valid badge number, and by intimidating people so that they don't come forward. And so the city's reliance, as it said, we rely on civilians to tell us whether there's a problem, is a good example of putting your head in the sand so that you don't know that there's a problem, because you know that police officers are then encouraged to prevent people from being effective in making complaints, and you know that people are being intimidated not to make complaints. And to then say that you rely on civilian complaints to identify whether there's a problem is circularly permitting yourselves to go forward with an unconstitutional practice.
And so if the judge finds for the plaintiffs, what in the remedy solutions would address this?
Well, if the plaintiffs are successful in obtaining the remedy that they're seeking, then the judge will appoint a monitor who starts a process. Part of that process would be identifying ways that the civilian complaints can be modified so that it addresses problems with civilians coming forward in the first place.
The stop and frisk trial concludes on Monday with summations. Then the court will take time to deliberate and then rule. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.